We're going to be talking with Hartford Deputy Police Chief Brian Foley.
He's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair this morning, Brad.
On the ATVs, and we were talking about that just the other day.
Yes, we were. Actually, we're going to cover a lot of ground. Chief, good morning. Welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. This ATV situation, what's going on in the city and the cities, because it's not just Hartford?
And why can't the police go after these people?
Well, I mean, that's a societal issue that, you know, basically society's told us that, in a nutshell, that they don't want the police chasing these ATVs, because the risk in a police chase for the riders and others, the innocent people walking down the street, is great and can mean death. And so it's we follow a statewide mandated policy on police pursuits that we are not going to chase motorcycles or ATVs, unfortunately. The teenage riders, or any of the riders, are plenty aware of this, and they, of course, ride around these ATVs on the streets, and they will literally taunt police officers, two wheelies, middle fingers, the whole thing, right in front of them. And basically the cops at that point are powerless to do anything about it, other than come up with creative means of enforcing the law. And we are doing that and trying everything we can. But it's a scary situation not just Hartford, but the region.
You mean to tell me, Chief, that these hoodlums, and that's what they are, if they give the police officers fingers, they actually do that?
Yeah, that actually happens. It's common. They'll look right at you, and they will do a wheelie right down the street. And, you know, you think it's just kids, you know, playing around on a off-road vehicle. But, you know, we saw a fatality last week here, and it's become much more than just a public nuisance, and people see it. That is, it's without a doubt one of our greatest complaints. We're working closely with our state agencies, other local agencies in the area, and some of our politicians. Senator Fonfara has been great with us in assisting, and State Rep Arce has, and the mayor have been great about getting us the resources in the future. And it's going to be some technology involved to help combat that. Police pursuits are going to end someday. And I believe that it'll be drone technology that will do it. You see police helicopters around the country that follow these police pursuits. So those police helicopters are quickly becoming antiques. And as police departments are investing in drones, it's a much cheaper and a much safer alternative to helicopters. It's incredibly cheaper. So that's something we are aggressively pursuing here in the capital city with our crime center. We have such a technological hub here in the city for video, for software, all for based in fighting crime and protecting our region. You will see some drone technology come out of here for specifically police pursuits that we hope, you know, saves lives and saves liability. You think, you know, a cop chase somebody and they die, the liability that comes out of that, the cost to the region that comes out of that, one of those cases will pay for an entire drone program.
Now, what will the drones do? I mean, the point being, what you're telling us this morning, Chief, is that these kids on these ATVs, they can do what they want. They can give you the finger. They can do anything they want, and nobody does anything. Who put this law into effect?
Again, it's what society wants for police pursuits. I got to tell you, what the drones will do, let me go back to that for a second. The drones will have technology where they can track an ATV and tell us where it parked, where it hid, where they got off. So we don't have to pursue it. It's going to tell us where it went. So it's some pretty amazing technology. It's costly now. The price will come down. But over the next 10 years, you will see more and more of this. Now, as far as you think the ATVs are an issue, we are starting to see teenagers that know that we're not going to chase stolen cars. And society is telling us the same thing. If we chase a stolen car and a teenager dies in that stolen car, or they crash into an innocent person, which happens a lot, that they don't want us to do that, and we get that. And if that's the law, well, you know what? As a police department, we're going to follow it, and we're going to do everything we can in our capacity to still fight the crime without breaking that law.
But you said it happens a lot. It just happened the other day, right?
Yeah, and that's just a horrible situation. You feel so sorry for the woman that was struck, and it's a stolen car.
She lost two legs.
She did. She did. Our detectives are investigating it and making significant progress in it. And it's frustrating. And when we look at the suspects that we have in these incidents, and several of them, we've had a few stolen car incidents over the last few days. They're all tied in, and everybody involved has a previous juvenile arrest history with stolen cars.
Wow.
Extensive. And, you know, it's frustrating for the cops. You know, we're doing our job out here. We are making the arrest. We are catching these juveniles stealing cars, and we're delivering them to the criminal justice system, only to have it regurgitated and back out here on the street for us to deal with again. And, you know, we lost a teen within the year, Keon Huff, to violence here in the city. And there was meetings and there was talk about change. And I know change is slow and it takes time to change. But, it just seems we're right back in the cycle. We made two arrests overnight for a homicide, yep, related again to stolen cars and tied into several of these other stolen car incidents. And these teens had significant criminal histories relating to stolen cars, neither of whom were from Hartford. The teens or the stolen cars were from Hartford, but we're left to clean it up here in the capital city. There's a lot of work to do, and we're frustrated as police, but it's not going to slow our efforts, and it's not going to stop us from trying to help our youth get the services that they need. But the juvenile justice system does appear to be a bit hobbled right now. I don't know what the answer is. I don't pretend to know what the answer is, other than to say we as a police department here in the city will do everything we can to get our youth in front of the services that they need. However, getting them behind the wheel of a stolen car every other month is not our idea of what those services should be.
Chief Foley, I tell you, you take a survey with people, and there's no reason. These are hoodlums. They don't have parents that take care of them. They talk back to the parents, the whole thing. And I just think it's an injustice to the majority of the people in this country.
So that's correct, but it's a little short-sighted. We arrested a juvenile last night. I met with Dad. This kid came from an incredibly challenged circumstance, something that you or I probably can't even imagine growing up in. And so it's not necessarily about this one juvenile, and I don't want to sound like, hey, you know, or we're the poor kid in bad circumstances, but, you know, that's kind of the fact. Incredible poor circumstances. This parent had a lot of kids, and I'm not going to put a number on it, but it's staggering to know how many children this father has fathered. And he's from challenged circumstances and has no means to support these children. And so the kids are just intensely poor. There's a breakdown somewhere. Most of this revolves around poverty. And we're not about just going in and locking up our kids and going, you know, and sending them from schools to our prisons. That's not what we're about. We as a police department, though, are doing what we're supposed to do as best we can within the rules that we have. And it just seems like it's a reoccurring cycle that we're helpless participants in.
Our special guest, and we are very, very thankful. He's been with us many times, Hartford Deputy Police Chief Brian Foley, and really lays it out so we know what a police officer has to go through.
Now, Brad, a couple of questions for Brian. First, Chief, from what I understand, there's a stolen car ring going on involving Hartford, Bridgeport, Waterbury. Sometimes these stolen cars end up abandoned in Greenwich, the southwestern part of the state. What do you know?
I can tell you that the ironic part is in Hartford, our stolen cars are going down. The amount of cars stolen here in the city, down 14% as of last week. But what I can also tell you is the amount of stolen cars recovered in Hartford from outside of town, and we can go ahead down into Greenwich. We've recovered cars from Greenwich here in the city. The number of stolen cars recovered from the region in the city has skyrocketed. And this is, again, we're going back to that key fob thing. We went over this big last year, the keyless entry system on cars. People living in the suburbs leave their key fobs or their valet key sometimes in the glove compartment or around the car so that it starts and the juveniles are able to start them. And it's literally a matter of them walking around and pulling on car door handles, getting in the car and pressing the start button. If it starts, they go. And they bring the cars here to Hartford. It's tied into the heroin and opioid addiction issue, where you have, you know, basically an addict in the suburbs steals a car, brings it to Hartford, and trades it off for a couple bags of heroin. And so that's the cycle. Or you have teens from the region going around doing the same thing in Hartford, going out into the region and taking the cars and bringing them here. But as you see, the two arrests we had last night related to the homicide, which is related to stolen cars, both those teens are not from Hartford. Both those cars are not from Hartford. But the victims in everything that's going on here and the incidents occurred in Hartford.
Okay, this is a key part of the story here, a key component of the story. The 63-year-old man who's sitting in the park on Sunday, just sitting down, relaxing on a summer's afternoon, gets fatally shot. And this was related to these teens who were from out of town and stolen cars. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. The poor guy's sitting there. Our crime center has the entire incident on video, and we were able to track the car that was involved in the homicide. It was stolen out of Stubbington. We found it in New Britain. And we found some kids, some teenagers in that car in New Britain, and that was between the video and between that, those kids and other witnesses, we were able to determine exactly what happened, with the homicide. And both those juveniles will end up in court this morning, be it juvenile court or be it adult court, whatever, the GA decides, and we're gonna move forward and hopefully, you know, you know, it's two more teenagers off our streets for a long time, and you hope that they get the services that they need while they're in prison. It's difficult to remain optimistic as this is, you know, this becomes not a police problem, and, you know, the stolen car issues and everything else, and you talk about hoodlums, and I get it, but it's an overall societal issue relating to poverty, relating to so many other socioeconomic conditions.
But you know, Chief, I know a lot of poor people, that don't do these things.
You bet.
And this is why the public is so astounded by this. I mean, this is the story that you're telling us this morning.
Well, I want to know, Brad, Chief, where did they get the guns, the juveniles?
Yeah.
Our guns tend to come from largely burglaries from the suburbs, again tied into the heroin thing, similar to the stolen cars. You have guns in houses. You have burglaries that occur with this opioid crisis, and burglaries are up everywhere in the region. And they get the guns in there. They trade them in the city here in Hartford. Our guns come from New Hampshire, Vermont, up there where the gun laws are easier, and they bring the guns down here, trade them for heroin, and bring them back up to New Hampshire. And occasionally you see straw buyers, people that will go and buy guns and then sell them to the drug dealers, where, you know, guns on the street actually increase in value on the streets because they're harder to get. So it's a commodity, and that's where they're coming from. We have not yet recovered the gun used in the homicide on Sunday, so I can't accurately tell you where that gun specifically came from. But if you watch us on social media, how many times a week do we put out something about a stolen gun
right
in the hands of a convicted felon on our streets? And our officers do an amazing job safely taking these people into custody despite the national narrative, without any violence, without any shootings, and they safely take them into custody. But you look at juveniles and stolen cars being approached by police officers, it's an extremely dangerous situation for a lot of people. So there's some big issues here. The police department here in Hartford, we're doing our part to help, but it's a much greater issue.
Is this as bad as you've ever seen it in law enforcement?
No, in the 90s, you know, everyone's got a pretty short memory. In the 90s, you know, if we had this many homicides back then, we would have been ecstatic. It was just, you know, we were putting off, you know, we had 50 homicides a year with the Los Cerritos and the Latin Kings and the Bloods, and we had, you know, a severe gang problem here in the city back in the 90s. So no, it's not as bad, and things are getting better. It's just as we work through them, some things rear their head. And right now it appears the juvenile justice system is what's rearing its head.
Well, what's happening? Are they just letting these kids out? Are they not giving the reformation they need?
That's probably not for me to point out, and I'm not looking to pick a fight with anybody at all. It's everybody's challenge. Now, we'll talk to people in the juvenile justice system, and they're scratching their heads, too, and equally as frustrated as the police are. So, again, it's a larger overall issue. Maybe it comes back to the family and how the children are being raised. You say you know poor people that are doing these things. They probably had parents that instilled values in them. Some children don't get those values instilled in them, and they have children and they don't instill the values in them, and it's the cycle. And that's, as police, we see that as that's the obvious answer to us. How do you stop it is the question.
That's you know something, Chief, you just hit it out of the ballpark. That's exactly what's going on. I'll tell you something right now that we really appreciate. You have come on this program. You tell us exactly what's going down so that people that listen to this radio program get it, and they get it periodically, because it's, as far as Dan and myself are concerned, this is one of the most important issues there is today. And maybe it'll help some of these parents. Maybe it won't. But anyway, at least we know what's going on.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. And you know, the days of police departments not sharing exactly what they think are going on are gone. And we need to be out there talking more. And Chief Rivella is amazing at allowing us and giving us the opportunities and the forums to do that, and making sure that everyone does stay well informed. It's so incredibly important when things like this happen.
Chief, thanks very much for spending some time with us today.
All right, guys. Talk soon.
Take care.
You bet.